Yo, what's up, y'all? This is Too Short, and you're in the Warriors Huddle.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And I'm proud to say, rejoining us after a far too long hiatus, San Francisco Chronicles beat writer for the Golden State Warriors and a man whose apartment ranges between 500 and 600 degrees every time we go there, Mr. Reshy Simmons.
Hey, it's also 700 degrees, even though we're not at my apartment.
It's a little hot here.
Yeah,
it's a little hot here.
I'm sitting on an ice pack, and I'm still sweltering.
I feel like it's a little rude for you to point that out. I thought I was just going to be able to tell a joke and move on.
I think it needs more discussion, for sure.
Well, we're not going to dive into that topic too deeply. I will say that we're really happy to have you back. I got super tired of the emails and everybody's takes telling me how they missed you. They didn't say anything about me. So if nothing else, you'll shut up all the people out there. So thanks for rejoining us, Diva. It's good to have you.
Yeah, I appreciate all those emails. They helped in contract negotiations. I got close to the max. And once again, I appreciate it. And I'll give you guys all 10%.
Yeah, we appreciate that. If by max you mean the cup of water I've given you right now, then it is well deserved. We've already spent too much time on the temperature of my house and the contract that this fool gets to do this podcast. So let's go ahead and jump in. Let's start with the insider's report. Dub Nation is reeling a little bit. We are less than 24 hours removed from a game one loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Panic is far too strong of a word, but people seem to be panicking after the first game. How'd the players take the loss?
I think they quit. I think they decided they're going to forfeit the rest of the series. Oklahoma City is clearly the more dominant team, and the Warriors have decided not to show up for game two.
For all those people who really wanted this asshole back, this is the type of insider's knowledge you get. Can we get a real answer? How'd they take it?
Exactly the way you expect the Warriors to. They are dogged competitors. They love challenges. Seconds after they blew a 14-point lead last night, Steph Curry smiled at Draymond Green and said, "This is going to be fun."
Okay.
Because it's a new challenge. It's something they've never had before. They've been down 2-1 in Memphis, down 2-1 in Cleveland, but they've never lost a game one. And this is a new challenge for them. They're excited about it.
And I think it's a lot different than being down 2-1 to a kind of a depleted Memphis team or an injured Cavs team. I mean, this is going to be their biggest challenge yet.
Which is weird, because when they were down 2-1 to Memphis, you panicked entirely and jumped with both feet off the bandwagon. So I can't imagine what's happening to you now. How should I take, as a fan, should I be happy that they're just treating this as another challenge and something that they're smiling about and moving on? I mean, you hear that. I am unnecessarily angry and angst-filled and weirded out by this. And certainly that's the better approach. But it also doesn't sound like they have an urgency or a panic after that loss.
There's certainly urgency. But the Warriors now have these experiences that they came back from 2-1 down in Memphis, a place where they had historically been terrible. It looked like they were going to go down 3-1, and that series was going to be bad for them. They were down 2-1 in Cleveland against the best player in the world at that time, and they came back and won the first championship in 40 years.
Matthew Dellavedova?
Yes. They have not lost two games in a row this year. They have those experiences to call on. Sure, there's a sense of urgency, but they also have all of this history to tell them they can handle
it. Yeah, I like that. How about in practice today? Same vibe?
Yeah, absolutely. They watched video, and one thing this coaching staff does is holds the guys accountable. So if there's a mistake, they run it and run it and run it and make the guys accountable. So there's that brings them back to reality a little bit, that says, hey, look, we weren't very good the other night. But then they got on the court, and it was the same loose vibe as ever.
Anybody bring up the Westbrook travel?
We in the media tried to. The best comment of all was Steve Kerr saying he hates the 2-minute report that the NBA puts out. Yep. Because it puts officials on the spot unnecessarily. They have an impossible job. The speed of the game, the size of the players, it's impossible. They're going to miss calls. And Kerr did the right thing, because now he's going to get some calls in game two.
Sure.
Right. They just seem to miss a lot of the calls when it comes to the Warriors. The fact that Steph Curry couldn't get one off the ball foul when they're just grabbing and holding him is just mind blowing.
There is a lot to unpack over those last three sentences, so let's take them in turn. One, 2-minute report. I'm with Steve Kerr. I don't understand who it's for. if they come out and the call went against you and the NBA lets you know that it went against you, it doesn't make me feel any better. It makes me furious. If the call was for me and they came out and let me know that they blew it, it doesn't make me feel any better. It kind of cheapens my win, right? As far as the actual Westbrook play, he traveled. Can we all agreement on that?
It dragged his pivot foot.
Okay, so there's no question they absolutely missed it. Which
it was like a Chris Webber type travel, you know? Drag that foot.
With a timeout. That's exactly right. In your guys' opinion, had somebody brought it up, let's say Steph casually mentions they should have called the travel at the end. Petty?
When you blow a 14-point lead, you can't talk about a travel.
Yeah, that's fair.
Especially because at that time, Billy Donovan was also calling timeout at that. And it's tough. You don't have a video on both Donovan and Westbrook at the same time. Donovan could have called timeout before he traveled. The officials didn't make that argument. But that was something that was going through my head, is that maybe Donovan called a timeout before Westbrook traveled.
Donovan looks a lot like Eddie Munster to me, but I won't shoot us down that rabbit hole. Let's finish out the last take, and this one's Scotty's. I couldn't agree more. I don't understand why the hell the NBA does not protect its cash cow. There is no question that Steph is the most important player in the league. This isn't a subjective take for me. It's an objective one. He is back-to-back MVP, the last of which the first unanimous player in the history of the league to achieve that distinction. And yet and still, this is something you pointed out to us, Rusty, last time I played the Clippers, that every time he's off ball, they hold him, they hit him, they clip him, they chip him, the whole nine yards. And last night we're watching that happen, and the refs don't call it.
So why doesn't
what the hell is happening?
Why isn't Steve Kerr and the team like in the media about this? Because that's the Trailblazers did this with the moving screen things, and it seemed to work.
Give me both. Why aren't they calling it? Why isn't this a bigger issue in the media?
Steph has to get better at drawing attention to it. The perfect example is last night, Kevin Durant is holding him at the three-point line as he does a backdoor cut. And Steph fights through it because he's such a competitor. He doesn't want to stop and scream and yell. Plus, the Warriors' offense is such a thing of rhythm that if he doesn't complete the backdoor cut, the pass goes into the seats and everybody looks terrible. So he continues the cut, gets to the rim. Kevin Durant catches up and blocks it. Yep. If Steph stops, yells, and points out that he's being held, they call it. But he doesn't. He completes plays.
Okay.
So that's part of the problem.
And it starts to be a little bit of a slippery slope, because then if he goes down that route, then you're looking like becoming a player like Chris Paul, who is doing that all the time and is constantly involving the refs in the game instead of just playing. Right.
I'd say do it. I want to see him do it anyways.
He's getting better when he has the ball. Almost always, on almost every three-point shot, he tries to make contact and draw attention to it. When he's at the rim now, he makes noises and tries to get contact. Yeah. So he's getting better at that. I think there is a way to draw attention to it off the ball. And I think the Warriors actually do that. Everybody talks about their illegal screens. I think the Warriors tell officials beforehand, look at this, that they're grabbing, holding Steph. And also, Steve Kerr's really good at the reverse psychology with the officials. In the Houston series, he kept talking about, we have to be sure we don't foul Harden. Yep. We're trying not, our game plan is not to foul Harden.
So he's secretly telling them, don't call
it. And last night, after they sent Westbrook to the line 8 times in the third quarter, Kerr doesn't blame that on the officials. Yeah. He says, we've got to be better at defense and not fouling. And all he's saying is, hey, officials, we're trying to do this. If you see our hands in there slapping, we're trying not to foul.
Yeah, right. You need to back off on the call. Is this unique? I mean, I'm trying to think of other, like, my analogy was going to be Jordan. They called everything with Jordan, but Jordan always had the ball, so it wasn't off the ball fouls. Is this style of defense against Steph, where they're holding him without the ball, unique? And is that why the refs are a little bit slow on the whistle?
It is unique, especially this day and age, that there's very little contact off the ball, especially the grabbing, the holding, like you see on Curry. And I think the officials are trained to watch the ball.
Yep.
They're trained to watch where the ball is. And so a lot of the stuff that happens away from the ball doesn't get seen. So I think that's one thing. And Adam Silver talked about this today. The reason they do the two-minute reports is that they always told the aggrieved team they should have been, the travel should have been called.
Sure, good
but
word.
Then they didn't tell the opposing team. They didn't tell the rest of the league. They didn't tell the fans. And so it looked like they were hiding something. So they're trying to be transparent now. So that's the reason why they're doing it. And he also talked about they need to have better training for their officials. They have the best officials in the world, but their angles need to be better. They've had a poor playoff so far. They need to be better. One of the things they need to do is be told, to watch off the ball. They got three guys out there. Somebody can watch the guys off the ball.
You know, that angle thing is what they blamed on the lack of the traveling call. They said they didn't have the angle on it, so they couldn't necessarily make it, which makes sense to me, I guess. And as far as the two-minute move, it also seems to be at least slightly connected to Tim Donaghy, right? I mean, they are going out of their way to be as transparent as they possibly can, because if anybody out there believes that there's any kind of shenanigans, for lack of a better phrase, that it could destroy the credibility of the league, they could be the WWF, so they got to do this.
That's a huge point, an accurate point. And the other thing Adam Silver is a little bit ahead of the other major sports executives in that he is okay with the daily fantasy sports. He's okay with gambling. He's thinking about going into those territories.
Sure.
And so if there's any idea that the league is messing with the lottery, that their officials are involved in the point totals or who wins, that's huge. And the NBA can't have that. That would be such a black eye to have that happen again.
We talked on last show, which I'm sure you know, because you listen to
every single podcast. Sometimes I rewind it and listen to it again, especially when you're telling long stories about cartoon characters.
Okay, I appreciate that. You mean Pepe Le Pew, and don't you lie to me. I know you fast forward through every time that I talk.
Yes.
But one of the things we went through last week was Scott Foster. And Scott and I talked about, look, are there actually NBA officials out there who try to influence the outcome of a game? What do you think to that? Do you think that there is any actual shadiness going on, or?
I don't think they come into a game thinking they're going to impact it. All the officials have their own personalities. They're human. So I think their personalities show in every game. Every official, you know what he calls, how he's going to act about certain things. And the other thing is, it's natural in a home court to not want to get booed. And so if there's a borderline call, it's easy to point the Warriors' way at Oracle or Oklahoma City's way at Chesapeake Energy Arena, right? Because you don't want to get booed. You're human.
Sure.
We all want to be liked. And I think that's just human nature.
Do you want a really long analogy about Pepe Le Pew right now?
Please, no.
I can do it later on. That's fine. Then let's jump into game one. Observations, lessons. What did we pull out of this one, gentlemen?
Oklahoma City's good.
Yeah.
They're really good.
You get paid the big bucks for a reason, man.
Here's why. Everybody knew they had two of the top 10 players in the league. They were really talented. And if they ever figured out to stagger those two guys' minutes, that they always had one of the guys on the court, if they ever figured out that they could play both Cantor and Adams at the same time and dominate the glass, that they'd be really good. And Donovan's figured all that stuff out now. They all understand their roles. But the most important thing is he somehow got them to start playing defense. They've always been super talented on offense, and two guys can bail them out. Now they play defense. They're scary.
I'd like someone to look into the idea whether or not Borat and Enes Kanter have ever been in the same room at the same time. I am not positive that they're different people. So, in fact, I'll put that on you, man, if you wouldn't mind doing a little bit of background research. I pulled not just that the OKC Thunder were good, we knew that, but that the Warriors are not going to get away with the same kind of B-minus game that they've been bringing against both Houston and Portland. And we saw the same kind of lazy tendencies, man. They were still quick to the turnover. They're still quick to flashy plays. And at least in the second half, the ball movement just came to a screeching halt. It felt like Mark Jackson ball. It felt like we were trying to beat him with individuals. When Clay didn't have it, it was off to Steph. When Steph didn't have it, it was off to Clay. The play that really sticks off in my mind, they had an isolation, I think it was in the fourth quarter, where Cantor, or Borat, depending on what your research reveals, was stuck out at the three-point line guarding Steph. And the ball went to Draymond, and instead of immediately isolating that and making sure that we could take advantage of how the play would play out, Draymond took like a 45-footer, this terrible three-point shot, and that played itself out over and over again through the second half, which was just killing me.
It's fascinating to me that you call that play out, because Steph had the ball, went at Cantor, and couldn't beat him, and that shocked me, and it told me that Steph Curry's not healthy. But then you're exactly right. He gave it up to Draymond, I think expecting to get it back after he had taken one run
he
at Cantor.
He looked like he had his hands up, was looking for the ball back.
And you know what? I wasn't that disappointed by the Warriors' turnovers. They only had 14.
Yep.
They would have taken that all year long.
Certainly.
The quick shots, the hero ball, that was the problem. And I think a little bit of that is they played so much without Stephen Curry over these last month, 6 weeks. I think they're not sure what to do. They panicked a little bit, and they all tried to be Steph Curry. And when Steph couldn't, they all kind of looked at each other like, oh, what are we going to do? And everybody tried to do it. Now, I'm not sure that's a bad thing that they all wanted to be the hero, but that doesn't work for their offense. Usually one of them, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, somebody, Iguodala, somebody steps up and saves the day. Last night, they were all bad at once.
Well, and I think that's a huge thing is who's going to be the X factor for this team. Because if you don't have another person, like, where is Iguodala gone? I mean, he looks tired. He's not being aggressive. We obviously know that Harrison Barnes hasn't shown up yet either. And in the playoffs, you need another person to step up. And maybe it's just for a game or whatnot, but you do need that X factor to step in. And the Warriors didn't get that in the second half.
Completely agree with that. There was a sequence of heat checks from players when they weren't hot in the fourth quarter. It's almost like we're standing on the shoulders of 73 wins and assuming that, of course, it's just going to come back at
him. Like that Klay shot in the
corner. Klay from the corner, the Draymond shot I was just talking about, all of these forced threes instead of, look, we're down four, we're down six against a really good team. Slow it down. Let's see what we can get. We kept trying to get back into the game in one play. I'll give you the other side of the ball, too, the good things. There are weird downsides to historical success. One of them is that if you lose a game, everybody loses their minds. You know, like, look, do you want to lose home court advantage? Of course you don't. You know, do you want to win last night? Of course we did. And you don't want to have a frustrating loss the way they did. Also, do losses happen in the playoffs? Yes. OKC is a good team. The idea that everybody is freaking out and worried, where did the Warriors go and what's going to happen now? The only reason that's coming up is because they were so damn good through the regular season that we expected that same elite level of success. Now, we don't have to go 16-0. All they have to do is win 16 games. It's okay that they lost one. It just has to be a learning process, right? They better step away from this and make some adjustments.
And they will. I mean, they haven't lost two games in a row all year. They won more road games than anyone in history.
Right.
They won more games than anybody in history. And that's what they're all thinking is,
yes.
Hey, this stinks that we're down 0-1. But they know they're going to win game two, and they believe they can go to Oklahoma City and win because they have.
I hope they have stronger language than stinks. What adjustments
what would
are you
be,
expecting?
What else could they use?
Scotty doesn't like bleeping, man. We don't necessarily have to go down that road. What kind of adjustments are you guys expecting? Heading into game two, what, if any, big changes are we going to see?
A lot. I think Klay Thompson will probably guard Russell Westbrook. I was shocked that Stephen Curry started on him. And what's funny is Russell Westbrook started 1-for-11.
Yep.
So it actually worked. But what didn't work is that they tried the Tony Allen treatment on Robeson, which usually would be great for Draymond Green to be free safety. And for some reason, he wasn't moving. He wasn't thinking three plays ahead like he normally is. He wasn't seeing the game in sequences. So I think they'll go away from that whole thing. I think they'll go back to what worked against Oklahoma City during the regular season, which is put Klay Thompson on Russell Westbrook. So then you get him guarding Russ, which always works, and you get a more focused Klay Thompson on offense. When he's being forced to defend, he's better on the other end.
And you put Steph on
Robeson. He just stands in the corner.
On nobody, basically. You ready to admit that I was right about that now? Or
no.
Let the record reflect at...
just because Rusty said it?
During today, I was like, man, what's up with Steph guarding Westbrook? And he goes, oh, no, it's only on the switches. No, that didn't happen at all.
Oh, no, they started Klay Thompson on Serge Ibaka. It was a
super...
It was a wild thing. And I understand it, I guess, coming out. I even thought, okay, they're going to do this for the first couple minutes just to see what Oklahoma City does. But then they stayed with it. And even
Steph
when it wasn't working.
That's what I thought. Did Steph want to prove to the world that he could guard the elite point guards? Was this a request?
I don't think this is the time where you do that.
No.
His knee's not healthy.
No, it's not the right time at
During
all.
During the regular season, Klay held Russell Westbrook to 35% shooting from the field and 17 from three-point line. You don't play around with that in the Western Conference Finals.
How about offensively? Do the Warriors change their... I mean, obviously, defensively, they got to accept what the other team's doing and then make adjustments and have a plan specific to them. Offensively, do the Warriors change what they do on a team-by-team basis, or is it the same system?
Do they start the same five? Do they start the small ball lineup?
No, they won't. They're going to play small ball at some points during this series, during game two. It's going to be a game-to-game adjustment. They even think they can use the small ball lineup against what Reggie Miller calls the King Kong lineup
If he says that one more time, I might just
him. Did he say on the broadcast last night that he calls the lineup of death the uh-oh lineup?
Yes.
He did say that?
Yes, and then he tried to take credit for it, and Marv took him in a different direction. I was just happy that we got the A-team from TNT. Steve Smith and that dude B.A., whoever the hell that is. I was so annoyed by that. But you
almost got Chris Webber, too, but he had a back injury and had to get out of it.
That would absolutely drive me crazy. The idea that Webber comes in and tries to pretend like he doesn't have some tortured history with Warrior fans, I feel like just screaming the words, time out and you over and over and over again. But again, I actually wanted an answer.
Is that what I could have subbed for stinks?
No, that one wouldn't hurt. Yeah, God, we really need to increase your swear game, Rusty.
We'll get Jim Barnett back on.
Yeah, there you go. Do the Warriors change offensively per team?
They don't. Obviously, their keys are different. Their counters are different from team to team because of what the team is doing on defense. But their system is the same. They do the same thing against every team.
What? How about let Curry touch the ball in the last 5 minutes?
That's weird. It's a weird idea.
I mean, what was that play? I mean, they played him off the ball so much, and I just feel like that kind of took him out of the game in the most clutch moments of the game.
Yeah, until it was too late, and then he got the two fadeaway three pointers. Yeah, it was an odd thing, and a lot of that has to do. I think Steve Kerr was actually calling some plays last night, but he trusts Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, all these guys so much. And I think you have to with this offense because it is a thing of rhythm and flow, and the players have to see the counter to the counter. They have to play it out. But last night, somebody needed to call 17 timeouts in a row and strangle those guys because they were out of control. As Draymond Green called it today, they were ballistic.
If change comes through adversity, then we just had the adversity and we'll see the kind of change that we expect to see. Also, I've believed in this front office and more specifically this coaching staff for, the last couple of years. You got to assume if anybody can come up with the adjustment, it will be them. But there's a lot of pressure on this next game. And the thing that frustrates me maybe the most is that even if Oklahoma City loses on Wednesday, they still got everything they wanted out of their trip here to the Bay. I mean, it got me physically angry watching that first game, which I'm sure is not a surprise to anybody out there.
The Thunder might just send Westbrook and Durant home.
Well, I mean, why not?
All you do is come on the road to split, right? They already got it. They made them play 45 and 44 minutes. Just send them home.
And they shot 17 of 51 and still won.
They're not going to shoot 33% combined very often in this series. So, yeah, the Warriors needed to win that one when those two were bad.
I think Russell Westbrook literally has the largest mouth of anyone I've ever seen in my life. Not like that he talks a lot. Like, really, like, the actual length of his mouth is next level. Think like Cookie Monster or other Muppets. Like, there's really no end to it. It just goes the full length of his face.
You really do check out dudes' hair, mouths.
Yeah,
like
people.
Did you have to say dudes?
I mean, people.
I've never heard you make an observation about a woman.
Yeah, this podcast is about the NBA, so we're not talking about the WNBA.
We have talked about the pop collar on the woman trainer for the Warriors.
Oh, that's true. Oh. Very
that's
valid
for
point.
You.
Valid
that
point.
Is for
did
y'all
you
know.
Read that Draymond Green said that he gets more out of watching WNBA games than NBA games?
No, did he have any comments about women's faces at all? Or?
Yeah.
He did?
No, he always observes women.
We'll have to listen to that. Getting us back on track. Vegas still has us as a favorite. The series price is -175, meaning that if I was to bet on the Warriors, I'd have to bet 175 to win 100. For them to win this series.
That doesn't sound like a very good deal.
No, and not at all. Well, that's why I'm asking you guys. Do you guys agree? Should the Warriors still be favorites after last night?
Yeah. I mean, we just discussed. They never lose two games in a row, and they won more road games than everybody in history.
Do you agree?
I just wonder, is Curry the same Curry that we've come to rely on? I mean, he hasn't declared the knee 100% healthy,
okay.
Right?
How worried are you? That's why you are the occasional bandwagon jumper. When things go poor, you tend to consider jumping
if
off.
If they lose the next game, I'm
okay,
I'm,
I know. How about right now? Where are you? 1 foot off, you're fine, and you're telling everybody calm down, don't worry about it. I mean, describe to me your panic level.
I am 1 foot off, definitely 1 foot off. I'm trying to tell myself things like it was a great regular season, don't get too angry or upset, like ruin your relationship with your wife, you know, just... This doesn't matter. Like, I'm being like, I don't care if they win.
I love that that's on the table. That one of the things you considered was, I'm ruining my relationship with my wife. Right? Nope. Don't do that, Scott. Only 1 foot now. Don't go both feet yet.
Just don't lose this next game.
Why do Warriors fans not trust this team?
Whoa. Why are you, are you looping me into that? Because I would bet that -175
I'm looping the Twitter reactions that I've seen over the last 20 hours. It just seems like everybody's panicked in Warriors land.
I have no idea. I think it is totally unjustified. I mean, you heard me say it before. It's the historical greatness thing. We got so spoiled with nonstop dominant wins that the second they were not dominant, it came back to bite us in the ass, and everybody's kind of freaking out. I thought the Warriors looked apathetic in the second half. I was the same way. When we went into halftime, they were up, what, 11, 12, something like that?
13.
Okay, 13. I was kind of passive about it. Like, of course, oh, we've got this. I considered some condescending tweets about how Oklahoma City was learning that we're not the old ass San Antonio Spurs and welcome the Oracle and all this stuff. Next thing I know, I look up and they're right on our ass. You know, so I mean, there was an apathy that was on
the crowd was apathetic. I thought it was a weak Oracle.
They were shocked. They were shocked. They kept just as the Warriors did. They kept expecting somebody to go on a tear. And while all these guys were trying to play hero ball, the Oracle crowd thought somebody will be a hero, and it never came.
Well, because it was like Durant misses a shot. Okay, well now the Warriors have a chance. They miss. Durant misses a shot. I mean, Durant goes 0-for-7 down the stretch, and somehow the Warriors stay behind.
He missed 8 shots before his dagger.
And you knew he was going to ultimately hit it. It was just a matter of time. Take me behind the scenes. What rivalries exist between these players?
Well, the obvious one is the centers, Boga and Adams.
How ugly is that?
Well, one's from Australia, one's from New Zealand. So somebody at practice today asked Boga if it meant something to Australia that Adams made it to the league.
Oh, boy.
And he was like, no. That's like asking somebody from Canada or somebody from America if it's good that a Canadian made the league. He's like, I don't care about that guy.
I once traveled around Europe and I ran into this Australian guy. We were drinking together. I really liked him. And he said, hold on for a second. I have to go give birth to a New Zealander. And he was talking about giving a or taking a So that was like, it's always kind of stuck with me about the rivalry. Yeah. Absent the actual nationalities between the two, is there other personal funk or is it just...
They're both physical players, so they get it. They smack each other around, and during a regular season, you can get away with it because then you don't see them for another month or two. But during a series, they're going to fight at some point during the series. It's inevitable.
Did you guys hear Stephen Adams' "Little Monkeys" quote?
I've only read it. I'd be interested to hear the audio.
We can do that for you now. Hold on for a second. We'll play it.
For you as a big to get out on the perimeter and chase these guys around, how much of a challenge is that?
Mate, I don't envy guards, mate. They're quick little monkeys, those guys.
Hey, congratulations. Good game, man. Good game. Yep.
What's your first reaction?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't... You know what? I have trouble understanding Stephen Adams sometimes. I think his accent is really strong. He talks quickly. He ends everything in mate. That's the one thing that I always get. But it's amazing how clear it is what he said.
Only that portion. Yeah, the rest of it, absolutely. I have no idea what the hell he said.
Yeah. After the game, I thought Sam Amick did a great job getting the apology from him. Yeah. But after the game in a locker room, nobody had heard what was on the broadcast, obviously, because we're at the game. So nobody asked him about it. But you could tell something was wrong. And looking back at it now, I understand why he was so disturbed about what had happened. People were asking him pretty simple questions about things that had happened in the game, and he kept saying, I don't know. I just don't know. They asked him about that huge play where he kind of fumbled the Westbrook pass around, and then got fouled and came up with two big free throws, and he's like, I don't know what I was doing. And looking back at that now, I understand why he was so upset, and we had no idea what was
because he was rattling around in his brain. I wonder how big this is going to be and what the hell is going to happen. For the record, he did come out and apologize, explained that there's a huge cultural difference and that he's quickly learning the boundaries. We won't touch that portion. Instead, just a couple comments from me. One, Chris Broussard, who's that giving the interview?
Chris Broussard.
His reaction was comical. I mean, I don't know if maybe he just didn't understand him. If he did, he gave him that super awkward, like, friendly smile, like, oh, no, everything's fine, where definitely nothing was fine the second that he dropped that. Secondly, obviously we'll never hear about it. The Warriors aren't going to touch it with a 10-foot pole, but based on your understanding of how the Warriors motivate themselves, do you think this becomes a rallying cry?
It's interesting because everyone at Warriors practice today claimed they had not heard it. Usually they have a planned response to everything, and I guess that was their plan,
exactly right?
Was to say, I didn't hear it, so I can't respond. But there's 100% chance that Draymond Green is a master of creating a reason to be mad at the other team. So he's got one, an easy one.
You didn't hear the actual quote before I played it for you now, but you knew what the hell they said. You don't actually have to hear the quote to understand its importance.
That's absolutely true.
This is Howard
true.
Cassell,
that,
right?
That is absolutely true. But I'll tell you that in my first time hearing the audio, audio, it struck me way differently than reading it.
Only because this makes Scott so nervous. We'll whisk us away into a different. Do you want to add anything here, Scott? Or?
I will just say, as far as Chris Broussard, I don't know.
Look how uncomfortable he is.
No, it's unbelievable. He's sweating so badly.
It is.
It's so hot.
It's so hot in here. Now, Chris Broussard, I forget where I heard this, but he does sound like somebody who's like trying to communicate to somebody in a club. Like he's always kind of speaking in this like loud voice as if the person's not going to be able to hear him and he's standing right next to them. And
he struck me like a stupid analogy, but I'll use it. Like he was talking to a crazy hot girl who he had a huge crush on about sports. And she said something that didn't make any sense at all. Talking to her about like the Lakers or something. She was like, oh, how's Magic Johnson doing? And he just smiles like, oh, really well. Like he didn't want to call him out. Wanted to maintain this fake relationship that he had with him. Different direction, same player. We saw really, really early in last night's game that Steven Adams was dealing with what looked to be a pretty nasty hand injury. They made very little contact with it. He kind of reels in pain. Then we get the close up and his hand was trembling and swollen. It's the last time we saw it. One, do you think Kerr will ask the Warriors to start hitting that hand as the game goes on? And two, or actually they're interrelated, is the NBA still that place? You know, in the 80s, for sure, we know it. Now, will that even be a move?
I don't think, well, one, they wouldn't do that to Steven Adams because put him in pain, it just makes him meaner and better.
Yeah, he seemed to hit his 6 free throws after his hand got hurt. Stupid and missed rugby. The first 4 when his hand was fine.
That's not the guy you want to, like, if he broke his foot, then all of a sudden he would be a better player.
He starts dunking off that foot.
That guy is mean and fantastic. But I don't think the NBA does that where they take hits out on injuries. But what they do is Steph Curry's right knee is banged up. And so part of Oklahoma City's game plan is to go at that, right? I think they look at that kind of stuff. So definitely injuries are part of the game plan, part of the scout, but not because you want to take a shot at it.
Do you know whether or not the Hitler Youth has finally accepted Kyle Singler?
I'll have to look into that.
You're still looking into that. I mean, it's been months. You don't know background, nothing?
I actually can't even get a contact at Hitler Youth. So, yeah, I've tried everything in my phone and nothing goes to them.
If I was a worse person, I'd say ask Steven Adams, but that's probably too soon for that joke. So I'll keep it in pocket.
Well, get Chris Broussard on the case.
How about friendships? We know rivalries. Are there any friendships between these two teams?
I mean, I'm scared to say that you know Russ and Steph are USA besties.
Why do you use that phrase? Why
it's
do you
Steph's
use that phrase?
Phrase besties.
It's not, there's no way Steph Curry uses the phrase besties.
He did say that
USA
besties.
No, that's not. I refuse to believe that. He's not like a 13-year-old girl. There's no way he used the phrase besties.
Sometimes he is kind of like a 13-year-old girl.
Like, well, I'll have to lean on you for that. Surprisingly, I don't have any background knowledge on how he actually is.
And you know what? 2 years ago, when Kevin Durant was on Team USA, before he decided to leave after the Paul George injury, he stayed after every practice working with Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, and Monty Williams. And those guys got really close. In their faith and also in their work ethic. So those guys obviously are very, very close.
Do you think this series has any impact on where KD ends up next year?
Absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely.
And how?
Because if they don't win this year, he knows they can't. So if the Warriors beat him, he knows that's where, if he wants to win a championship, that's where he has to go.
You think it's that simple? The Warriors beat him, he comes to the Warriors?
I think if he gets to the finals, Oklahoma City becomes an option. There's still the thing where he might go back for one more year just because he can make so much more money.
I thought you might say he goes to D.C. because that's where he's from.
Well, that's what I'd really like to have happen. But we've talked about this before. Kevin Durant is not a spotlight guy. He doesn't want to go home and have that spotlight. Him being a secondary or tertiary player in Golden State would be perfect for him. He wants to kiss his mom before the games and win and have fun. He doesn't want to be in the spotlight. That's why I don't believe the L.A. stuff, the going home stuff. To me, the Warriors are the perfect option if they win this series. If Oklahoma City wins this and goes to the finals, I think that makes it more of a chance for him to go back to Oklahoma City. I don't know why that choked me up so much.
Well, you're talking as fast as anyone I've ever seen, so maybe that's what ultimately caught up to you. Have you offered any Washington hats to Kevin Durant?
Yes.
You have. Yes. Okay. And it, has he worn them or does he have some pride?
He wears them off the floor. Stephen Curry also has Under Armour shoes with Maryland flags on them. There, so I'm sure that there could be an offer there.
There you go.
I mean, I think we could put together a pretty good pitch for DC.
Let's quickly move in another direction. Before the next time we record, the Warriors will find themselves in Chesapeake Arena. You have some weird heart on for how great a crowd that is and what kind of an environment it is. Remind us, why? Why is that such a tough place to play?
It has a fantastic buzz. So here's the thing. Oklahoma City is basically a college town that used to have fights between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. But now they all come together for this one thing, which is the Oklahoma City Thunder. So they love it. They're huge sports fans with one thing they can agree on. That's the Thunder. It's the only place in the league where they pray before the game. All the fans are into it. The buzz is insane. You don't have to shun the people on a video board to make them put T-shirts on. They just do it because they want to be part of it. They love their players. They've supported them even when they've been terrible and when they've had injuries. It's as loud as any place in the NBA, and that includes Oracle Arena. It's a fantastic – and they sit us courtside.
What's wrong with the people who go to the game and won't put on a goddamn T-shirt? How hard is it to put
David
on a free
Lee.
T-shirt?
David Lee was at the game, have a T-shirt on.
T-shirt's very free. It fits you. I mean, who are these people who show up and think, you know what, this shirt's way too nice. I refuse to cover it.
I understand
You'd be that
your
guy.
Point. For the David Lees of the world. Like, he just had a fancy black shirt on, so he didn't want to put the other one over it, right? I get that. But the guy who spent $300 on the terrible sleeved jersey at the team store being asked to put a free T-shirt on, like, I'm not covering up my $300 shirt that I bought at your arena to put your free shirt on.
Here's why I think that's wrong. Generally speaking, that's right. But if I wear that $300 jersey to the swimming pool and then refuse to take it off when I jump in the water, I'm a butthole for having come to the swimming pool wearing that.
Why would you wear a jersey in the pool?
Exactly. When I come to the playoff game and I know they're going to hand me a free shirt, what the hell am I doing wearing a shirt that I refuse to cover up? You knew. The swimming pool, I know I'm putting on a swimsuit. The playoff game, I know I'm putting on that shirt. Why did you have to make yourself so self-important?
That's actually a really good point.
Boom. That's the first time I've ever had one of those. Let's move quickly before you do come up with a comeback. Last question before we get out of this topic. Injury report. We've got three that are worth hearing about. Hopefully none of them serious. Bogut's abductor, Draymond's ankle, Curry's knee.
Well, first of all, it's an adductor.
That's what I said.
Abductor is a very different part of the body.
That's what I said.
Yeah, this is the groin, close to the hip.
Thank you, Dr. Simmons.
And it's not going to be healthy the rest of the series, probably the rest of the season, especially if he keeps playing on it, which he says he has every intention of doing. So that one's no good. Stephen Curry, we were told, might be 100% by the time this series started. It felt to me like in the interview he almost took offense to that. He was like, hey, man, this thing still hurts.
Right.
The one thing that was really cool at the end of that interview, he said, and this will be the last time I talk about it because I'm out there playing. I don't have any excuses. But it's still a pain tolerance issue there. And I think you see a difference in him. I don't think – even he had that amazing overtime period in Portland, and I still don't think that we've seen him close to 100%. I don't think he's in rhythm. I don't think he feels great out there. And Draymond Green is just a superman. His ankle, it might be broken, but there's nothing that's keeping him off the floor.
Any missed games on the horizons?
Bogut would be the one that you might consider at some point. But I think he'll go out. If he's playing 15, 20 minutes a night, I think he'll go out there and give it the best he can. I don't expect any of them to miss games unless something else happens.
We ran a little bit long, so I'm going to take two of my favorite segments, and then combine them. They are lessons learned and story time with Uncle Rusty, and I'm glad to have Uncle Rusty back. What I want to know is what you think Steve Kerr learned from last night, and give me a Steve Kerr story.
Yeah, well, I think the Warriors coaching staff has proven that they'll make adjustments as well or better than anybody in a league. Proved last year with Memphis when they came up with the Tony Allen scheme. Proved in Cleveland when they came up with the going small with Andre Iguodala in the starting lineup. And I expect the Warriors to do that. Like we talked about, I think Klay Thompson goes back to guarding Russell Westbrook. And I think the free safety thing with Draymond is probably done.
Okay.
So I think I expect that that's what they learned in the first game. I was surprised today their thoughts on going small. I thought they would go one of two ways. I thought they would go dramatic, that they would either go small all the time or that they would say, look, against the King Kong lineup,
no,
which you guys hate, that they're just simply not going to do it anymore.
Okay.
Kerr may have been playing coy But I think he was being honest when he said, we're going to keep using it like we do. Sometimes it's a feel thing, and we're going to use it when we want to. And that surprised me. I thought they would go dramatic one way or another. But that's what I think he learned out of game one.
All right, and that leads me to a story. Give me something on Steve Kerr.
There are so many fantastic stories with Steve Kerr. His whole life is a book that somebody should write. I don't know how to write, or else I
Yeah, aren't you an author?
No, I don't know. I don't even know a better word than stinks sometimes.
That's factually correct. Yeah. But you had some really impressive ones today. Tertiary was
nice.
One. Yeah.
One of my favorites was this year when we were in Chicago, and I can relate to this because at this time, Steve Kerr felt terrible. He had decided that he's on the road with the team. He's trying to test everything that he has to see if he can come back. He's got a spinal fluid leak. He's having these terrible headaches. And he had just gone on a road trip with the Warriors, his first of the year, and came back and told the guys, look, fellas, I can't do it. The travel's not working for me. And everybody just thought, okay, he's not coming back. Draymond Green said he's not coming back. Yep. Luke's our guy. But he decides to go on this next trip to see if he can do it. It goes through Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago. He's in Chicago, and he takes the coaching staff to the comedy club and gets on stage and does some things with the stand-up and improv, and apparently is fantastic, is funny. And we get to see that all the time with him in our little area. But you don't have to be very funny in a basketball interview to get the media chuckling.
The Chris Broussards of the world are going to love it anyways.
Right. Yeah. But apparently he is like comically funny in front of the people was fantastic. And the next day at shoot around, he drains a half court shot, and I'm thinking to myself, he's coming back.
No better way to end it. Huge fun. That's true every week, certainly true this week. Please remember, you want to reach out to us. You have any issues you'd like us to talk about, questions you'd like answered, hate mail you'd like sent, it should all go towards whereshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is @whereshuddle. Rusty, you changed your mind? You're going to give us your Twitter handle? Or
that is not in the contract.
That is not in the contract. Fair enough. Our website remains whereshworld.net, and we are on both Google Play and a bunch of other iTunes, a bunch of other podcasting services. Get out there, download us, give us a review. We'd really appreciate it. Hopefully, we'll see you next week. And until then, go Warriors.
Who's that kid in the blue and gold? Always got a smile everywhere he goes. That's Curry, Steph Curry. Breaking records, breaking hearts. All the fans knew right from the start. That's Curry, number 30. Quick on the break, never skipped a beat. Known for hitting shots from 40 feet. That's Curry, Steph Curry.
Good.